from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today we're going to revisit some of our favorite interviews from the past summer. I'll start with an interview I did with musician Kara Jean Wallers about her new CD.
And we'll listen to my interview from earlier this summer when the cheetah exhibit first opened at the zoo.
And then we'll wrap things up with a listen to jazz musician Gary Walter's new CD. Plus, we will have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR.
Hi, this is Travis DiNicola. Today we're revisiting some of our favorite Art of the Matter interviews from this summer. We'll start with my interview with musician Kara Jean Wallers from July.
Travis DiNicola got his own preview when Kara and Grover joined him in our studio.
Poetry covers all the trees as far as the eye can see.
It's called Goodnight Charlotte. It's a collection of 10 songs that have been written over the course of probably the last 3 years. We've been recording it for, what'd you say, about the past year and a half or so?
Yeah, about that.
How long have you two been playing together?
About a year and a half.
About a year and a half?
We got together to do this project.
Yeah.
Well, she called me up to do the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. And Grover, now you're a cellist, and Kara Jean, vocals and guitar. Uh-huh. Do you also both do something else on this as well, or is that primarily?
No, I'm just vocals and guitar.
Okay, so how did the two of you get together?
I
mean, it's a great combination. The sound is fantastic, the cello and guitar.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, we really enjoy it, so I'm glad you do, too.
Absolutely.
I was a bass player for a really long time and sort of a closet songwriter, and I started playing some songs that I had written and was encouraged to put them on an album and decided that I wanted to do it, and kept them close for a while until I really knew what direction I wanted to take. And I went to see Grover play in a band called Blueprint Music at the Riverfront Stage, where we're having our CD release party, and just really fell in love with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called him up and I said, hey, do you want to play on this album? And it was really kind of cool because normally I think musicians, when they start to play together, they're friends for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then groups sort of blossom out of that. But with Grover, we started strictly with a professional relationship and became friends now. So
Grover, were you familiar with Kara Jean's music beforehand, or sort of you got this call out of the blue and thought, who is this lady? Or?
Well, I knew of Kara. I had never heard her songs before.
Mm-hmm.
But, we have several intersecting circles of friends over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I was certainly aware of her, but I'd never heard the songs before. And, we got together about a year and a half ago in a basement, and I started to listen to these songs and, you know, did some improvising to them and really, really liked the quality of the lyric.
Now, tell me a little bit more about your background, Grover, because, I mean, when I listen to the music and the songs that I've heard so far, I'm not sure the best way to describe it, but I kind of think of it as sort of like this ethereal folk music sort of sound that is great, and the cello really makes it interesting, I imagine that probably that wasn't what you started out playing as a cellist. Or.
No, I started in a traditional classical background. I attended Butler University many years ago, and studied with Arkady Orlovsky. And then when I got out of school, started experimenting with a lot of different popular forms.
Mm-hmm.
I was in lived in L.A. for a while and played in punk bands and then played in cover bands. And then about 15 years ago, rediscovered the cello with folk music and the new acoustic movement that took place in the early 90s.
Okay.
And I've been pretty much hooked ever since. And so with the cello, I get to do a lot of different, play a lot of roles. Sometimes I'm a bass player, sometimes I'm a lead player, sometimes I'm a backup singer, and Kara's generous enough to pretty much let me do what I want on her songs. Thanks for that.
It creates, I like how, you know, when I was doing these songs by myself, I always felt sort of isolated from the space that the story occurred in, and the cello has a real human quality to it. Mm-hmm. It's a good approximation of a human voice at times, and so I think that I really like how the cello sort of creates the room that these stories exist in, and also I think it kind of adds like a second perspective. So like when I'm telling these stories, there's somebody else that's sort of responding to them.
Well, let's take a listen to how that sounds. One of the tracks on the new CD, Goodnight Charlotte, is titled Heroes. Tell me a little bit about that one.
That's actually a pretty recent song that was just what I think I wrote it this past winter. I guess, well, it's about snowfall, so it's about waiting for the snow.
Never had the nerve to be rain.
In the car on the way back from Cleveland, and the guitar kind of sounds like the windshield wipers of a car going back and forth. So on these long
drives.
I've
driven back from Cleveland in the snow many times, and I can imagine
it was more freezing rain, really. Yeah. but
Kara Jean, tell me a little about some of the lyrics that you're writing. It sounds like you really have a story in mind with each one of them.
You mean when I start writing
them?
Yeah. I don't. They just kind of they kind of evolve out of I get asked a lot about how I write or what my method is, and I hear a lot of songwriters talk about catching songs, or that they have a notebook that they write down lines and then they come back to it. But I think that I like to kind of shoot from the hip a little bit, and when I write and explore these stories and explore these ideas sort of as I'm thinking about them, just like you would in a conversation. So I always do it by myself, and it took me a couple of years to lose the inhibition and stop feeling silly in front of my dog. But
Is that why there's an image of a dog howling on the back of the CD?
Yeah, that might be a Doberman or a lab. We're not really sure whose dog it is, but we have a couple of songs about dogs too.
Yeah, there's one called Black Dog on there.
Yeah, right? It's kind of about a dog, kind of about a tuba player, kind of about a Led Zeppelin song. It's got a lot of stuff in there.
Let's take a listen to another song, Marks on the Earth. Tell me a bit about that one.
It's about sort of your heart breaking. It's about the moment that your heart just sort of shatters into a million pieces, and I guess I sort of imagined that happening as the smoke rising and these doves rising from it, and the marks that burning makes on the earth, like if you were to light a match or something, how it would just scorch the earth in that like small quick flame.
Sure.
The time that happens,
the marks that they make on the earth are in the shape of two white doves that could fly over treetops to the stars, where they're free from the earth in a blanket of sleep that could cover their words. And I know if
But that movie is actually, that song is actually in a movie that Grover and I just finished scoring called Paradise Recovered. It's in the trailer, and it's in kind of like a pretty pivotal scene in the middle of the movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Is it a locally produced film? Or?
It was shot in Bloomington and in mm-hmm. Austin, Texas, and it was written by a wonderful woman named Andy Redwine, a tremendous writer. And she was able to assemble some wonderful talent to produce this film. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, with this Indiana connection, there's some musical family tree acts that are also in this film, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just a really strong Indiana connection. And we're hoping that the film will be in the Heartland Film Festival coming up?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We hope. Well, I'm sure it'll screen locally. But.
Yeah. Cool. Just finished post-production in June.
Mm-hmm. Grover, tell me a little bit about the process for you as far as working on these songs with Kara.
Well, I try to, I really try to channel into the emotion of a performance. And mm-hmm. from night to night, the tenor of these songs will change. And I really try to tailor my part to how she's singing it and how she's performing at the time. So when we were in the recording process, we tried to capture a performance that moved us both, and then I followed up with tracks to try to underscore some of the images that she talks about in the mm-hmm. songs, try to provide some of those background parts that I talked about before. And I try not to overthink things. It's really hard. It's been the hardest lesson I've ever learned, but a good friend of mine, Matt Kaur, says, think less, feel more. And I really try to take that approach to the tracks.
Let's take a listen to actually it's the last track on the new CD, For Me and You.
You can always find a little place inside for me and you. In the velvet darkness, tin cans will ring out my words for you. On the other side, your breathing voice is like velvet too.
This song kind of, I wrote this for a friend of mine, is a filmmaker, and his name's David Yosha, and he's a very dear friend of mine. But I wrote it for him, and it kind of, we text late at night sometimes, like kids, cause I guess because it's fun. But it kind of reminds me of, it doesn't sound anything like Tom Waits, but to me it has some sort of like Tom Waits sort of sensibility, like you're just sort of pacing the floor. And late at night, so it's almost a lullaby, really.
It's a slow waltz.
It's kind of, yeah, it's a slow waltz. So it's almost, it's like a children's lullaby for an adult, I guess.
There you go.
Now, I've seen that on some past CDs you've done, Kara, you've played the accordion before?
Mm-hmm,
is that right? But no accordion on this album?
No.
What happened to the accordion?
I get asked to play accordion a lot because I have an accordion. I'm not a brilliant accordion player. I can kind of, you know, do some fills and things like that. But yeah, I've played, accordion before. I've played bass before and some piano and just a lot of different things. I think I started playing guitar just because I was writing songs, and it's a lot easier. It's very difficult to accompany yourself when you're singing on the accordion. Some people can do it brilliantly, but I can't.
I've searched all the world, and I've never found a peace that runs through me like when you're
Travesty Nicola with musicians Kara Jean Wallers and Grover Peridot. For more information, visit KaraJeanWallers.com, and that is CaraJean WAHLERS.com, KaraJeanWallers.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Next, we'll have a listen to my interview from early this summer when the cheetah exhibit first opened at the zoo.
It's in the cat family, and it purrs when it's resting, but it never roars. It sees rather than smells its prey, and it's the fastest animal on land. It is the mighty cheetah. And here's one more fact you should know. It's endangered. Cat lover Sharon Gamble invited Mara Giles to tell us about the new cheetah, the Race for Survival exhibit, which opened during Memorial Day weekend at the Indianapolis Zoo.
All right, so before we talk about why cheetahs are endangered, I just want to establish some facts about them. They're the fastest land animal, right?
Yes, they are the fastest land animal in the world, as far as we know.
And how fast can they go?
They can go about 0 to 70 in probably 3 seconds.
Man.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Their bodies are just built different than any other animal. They're really lean, and they're a little bit aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm. They've got great lung capacity too, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. They're able to reach these high speeds, but of course they do that to catch prey.
Right.
And once they do that, they have to rest for at least 30 minutes. I mean, their temperature, body temperature goes way up, and their respiratory rate goes way up, and really to rates that could be fatal if they don't rest. So a lot of times, even though they're so fast, they have to wait about 30 minutes.
So they're sprinters. They're not marathoners.
That's right. Definitely yeah. Sprinters.
And where do they come from originally? Where were cheetahs first found?
Most of the cheetahs today are in Africa. The biggest population of them can be found in Namibia, where Dr. Lori Marker, who's the founder of the Cheetah Conservation Fund, works with the rest of the population there.
And cheetahs are endangered, and why is that?
They're extremely endangered, and the main reason is because, especially in Namibia, the cheetahs are looking for prey, and the easy prey is livestock, farmers' livestock in Africa. And so if a cheetah goes for livestock, the farmers, they need their livestock too. So they'll actually shoot and kill the cheetah to protect their livelihood. So that's how we're losing a lot of cheetahs. But Lori Marker has discovered a way to help keep that from happening, and that is one of the things that you can see at the new Indianapolis Zoo exhibit.
And you're going to give us a hint about that.
I certainly am. It's kind of a wild thing because it's actually a dog. It's a dog that does this. They're called Kangal dogs, and they're guard dogs. And so Lori Marker has been working to provide farmers in Africa with these dogs. What the dogs do is they will guard the livestock, and if the cheetahs, I mean, they're all about getting in and getting out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they hear a dog barking, they will stay away because they don't want confrontation. They just want their prey.
They need a meal.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they'll find a meal somewhere else. So it's great because it can stop, you know, something deadly from happening. So that's one way to keep the cheetahs alive. It seems so simple.
Yeah.
But at the Indianapolis Zoo now, we have two of these Kangal dogs. And so every day during the summer, we're going to be having chats with zookeepers and various animals, including these dogs, every hour that we're open. So every hour on the hour, you can come and you can meet one of these Kangal dogs, and they are enormous dogs. Right now, they are just not even a year old and already 90, 100 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. They're contenders.
Yes, definitely.
How many do you have?
We have 5 right now. We have 3 females and 2 males, and they're kept in 2 separate yards. But they, you know, can see each other, mm-hmm. and they can also see the elephants and the zebras, and so...
So it feels like home to them.
Yeah, it gives you a really nice... And when you visit the Indianapolis Zoo, you can feel like you are really in the African plains, and, you know, and that you're in a real savanna, and you can see all across. This exhibit has opened up the entire area, so it's really an experience now.
And I mentioned, we were chatting before I turned the microphones on, that there's a cheetah cam, and I keep
That's
tuning
right.
in. I haven't seen a cheetah yet, but I've seen an elephant in the distance, and it's, you know, it feels like you're there, not just there at the zoo, but there in this plains environment. So let's go back to the cheetahs and the herds for a second. Obviously, cheetahs are
are smart animals, and they figured out, okay, here's an easy, reliable way to get my nutrition. I'll just hang out and stalk the herd. Now, the Kangal dogs are going to chase them away. Is there enough natural prey that's not being maintained by a farmer, then, that they're going to find meals?
Yeah, really they shouldn't have any problem, but a cheetah can use an area larger than, we'll say, the loop of 465. They can, you know, they're used to using an area that size, larger than our city.
No wonder they're so lean and muscular.
Exactly.
They have a big range.
They do a lot of walking.
They are in the cat family.
Yes.
The big cat family. They don't roar, though.
They purr, I understand? They do. They purr, and they also chirp. And they make a few other noises, but
is that to communicate with each other, or is that are they trying to scare prey, or what are they doing?
A little bit of both, I think. For attraction, though, they will chirp. Right now, one of the zookeepers has told me that one of our females lately has been chirping at one of the males, which means she likes him. So the chirp is kind of like an I like you sound.
A little flirtation going on out there.
Yeah.
Now, you're keeping the males and the females separate because?
Most of the animals right now we keep males and females separate. Generally, a lot of animals like this are kind of solitary animals. But we can keep these in groups because the three females are from the same litter. The two males are from the same litter.
Okay. But you wouldn't. Because there are dedicated places elsewhere in zoos and other environments where cheetahs are being bred, if this attraction develops, you're not going to try to get the male and the female that are attracted to one another together.
Well, you know, it's kind of undecided right now. The zoo participates in species survival plans with various different endangered animals. We don't participate in that with the cheetahs yet. I don't know that we will, but, you know, there, of course, is an opportunity where we could do that. There are places, like in Cincinnati and other areas, that have large breeding programs. And actually, our three females came from Cincinnati. We have it's the largest exhibit of cheetahs. If you don't count breeding programs in zoos, we're the largest cheetah zoo exhibit in the country right now.
Cool. The international population of cheetahs is how many? Is it?
It's less than 12,000. It might be less than 10,000 right now. In Namibia is where where most of them are. It's less than 10,000 there.
That's scary.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, these cats are beautiful and they're magnificent animals and they're really important to our natural world. And you know, that's one of the things we're trying to do is educate people about, you know, why they're important and what people can do to help protect them in the wild.
Sure. Here's an odd question. If these cheetahs were in the wild, they would be hunting prey. How do you feed them in the zoo?
We feed them mostly chunks of meat, chunks of tenderloin, very high quality beef. The two males actually are retired program animals from the Columbus Zoo. So our keepers can get close to them. Now, they are still wild animals, so they have to be careful.
Sure.
But they're used to people, the two male cheetahs. So our keepers can get close to them and feed them that way. The three females tend to be a little bit standoffish to humans, so they might just back up, so the keepers might, you know, set the food out before the cheetahs go out, or they might, you know, throw in some hunks of meat into one side of the exhibit.
I'm sure this is different for different animals, different species, but will these cheetahs be always in a zoo, or is there some sense that they might eventually go back to, or maybe not back to because they were bred in captivity, would they be released ever?
No, it's really dangerous for most animals to be released back into the wild, and mainly that's because they're used to getting their meals.
Sure.
If we sent, you know, any of our animals into the wild that, you know, are used to being in human care, they might die because they wouldn't know how to get their meals.
Right.
And the two males are actually 7 years old, and cheetahs can live to be about 10. So they're retired program animals, so they will stay with us for the duration.
And they're the elder wise men.
They are. Group. And you can tell because they're a little bit, they're a little more calm than the three females.
Hmm. What's the strangest or most interesting behavior you've seen so far now that you've had a chance to kind of be around them a little bit?
What I thought was kind of wild is that they, well, the keepers call it, they spit.
Really?
the females, if there's something they don't like, if they feel like they're being threatened, they will kind of, I call it more of a hiss, but it's kind of a spit, and they'll spit at you, actually, if they feel that they're being threatened.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to understand one more thing about the cheetahs. Mm-hmm. Most animals, most large cats hunt by sense of smell, but cheetahs don't.
Cheetahs can see a very long way away. They have a very good sense of sight, and they're so fast. So if they see something far away, they could get there, you know, in 3 seconds.
Well, maybe that's good to keep in mind. They might not be spitting at you. It might be something, you know, many yards
that's
away.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Sharon Gamble with Mara Giles of the Indianapolis Zoo, where you can see Cheetah, the race for survival. If you go to indiezoo.com, you can learn about cheetah programming and even tune into the Cheetah Cam to see if you can spot these elegant cats. Well, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
If people are listening on Friday night to Art of the Matter, then I encourage them to go out to the grounds of the IMA tomorrow afternoon because we are going to be live from Penrod, Indiana's nicest day from noon to 4.
It is, and I think it's the 44th annual. Isn't not that we've been there all time, but...
No. But we actually, if you are listening Saturday afternoon, well, we have been here actually live from noon to 4, and now we're running our regular show. Penrod is wrapping up at 5 p.m. on Saturday, but there's still time for us to do our calendar that we call...
What do we do?
There you go.
Wow. I'm just trying to keep track of us. That was complicated.
There's so many fun things going on this weekend. I mean, in addition to Penrod, you've got Greek Fest, which is still going on both Friday and Saturday night. Also, this is a cool new event. Two Wheels, One City that Sun King Brewery is putting on down at City Market starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday. And it's a combination of food and fun and beer and biking. So if you're into biking, can go check out
Saturday the
11th. Two Wheels Once Saturday the 11th. Cool. So we could actually get there after Penrod.
We could indeed. We could indeed. But drink judiciously if you're going to ride.
Yeah.
hey, this is coming up. If the Penrod Arts Fair, if at the end of the day you say, oh, all the outdoor art fairs are done for the year. No, not so true. The Rocky Ripple Art Festival is coming up on Saturday the 25th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Free admission, fun for all ages, 6 bands, more than 50 artists or artisans, interactive kids activities, a playground, rescue dogs, a bike rack, encouraging you to pedal over there. And in fact, there will be bicycle mechanics on hand to offer a light fall tune-up to your bike. So lots and lots of fun. All proceeds support Rocky Ripple Parks and Green Spaces. And where is it, you might ask?
Where is it?
It's in Holt Park in Rocky Ripple, 842 West 53rd Street. And don't blame us if you find your way in and can't figure your way out. Just grab a local and say, how do I get out of Rocky Ripple?
There you go. That's right. Hey, something that was going on again Saturday the 11th. So if you're listening Friday night, there's still a chance to participate. If you're listening on Saturday, well, here's a teaser for it, and that is Art versus Art, their paint day. And that's when people actually...
Art versus Art.
Nicely done. When people actually make the paintings takes place from 10 to 4 on Saturday. So if you're listening Friday night, there's still a chance. There's a $15 entry fee. You can register online at primarycolors.org, and they've got all the information. Or if you've missed that, then you want to see the big competition, the main event, which is Friday, September 24th, and that starts at 8 p.m. at the Vogue in Broad Ripple. If you don't know about Art versus Art, well, it's a crazy winner-take-all art competition.
And losers get the chainsaw or other creative...
The wheel of death.
...destruction. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun, and it is crowded, so go early and stake out a place
and
to
if you haven't already,
check
out the Primary Colors website, because after this weekend, you can actually start voting on the pieces that you want to see go to the final rounds.
Speaking of colors, It is time to put more color in your garden. It's time for the Central Indiana Fall Plant Swap. It's coming up on Sunday, September 19th at 2 o'clock at Holiday Park. That's 6363 Spring Mill Road on the northwest side of Indianapolis. And here's how you participate. It is a plant swap, which means you need to bring plants with you. You must bring at least one dozen plants. And you must have at least two varieties of plants. If you can bring something that's extra special, you get bonus points for that. You need to identify your plants very clearly with the plant name and care. For example, Halcyon hosta, it takes shade. For best results, don't dig up your plants that day. Pre-pot them a week or two earlier. You can tell these people are serious about their plant swap. And it's a round-robin format, so very cool. And again, Central Indiana Fall Plant Swap, Sunday, September 19th, 2 o'clock, Holiday Park.
Cool. Next weekend, Indie Jazz Fest, one day only this year at the Opta Park. That's the Optimist Park up in Broad Ripple, right across from the Indianapolis Arts Center. Gates open at 11 a.m. Al Jarreau is going to be playing, as well as Najee, the Mike Sturm Band, Charmaine Neville Band, Al Studios All-Stars, all types of great musicians are performing all day long. Tons of fun. Absolutely check it out.
One day, make it count. Hey, Storytelling Arts of Indiana and the Indie Fringe Festival are presenting. Yeah, I know you thought Fringe was over, right? But they're presenting
Fringe
never first.
Ends.
That's right. Fringe is actually a not-for-profit that's here all year long, and they are partnered with a lot of other folks around town, so you'll hear their name regularly. Storytelling Arts and Indie Fringe are presenting the first annual storytelling contest during Storytelling Arts series Jabberwocky on Tuesday, September 21st at the Indie Fringe building. Registration starts at 5:30. The contest starts at 6. Tickets are $10 at the door. Includes delicious appetizers and a cash bar. And if you register to tell a ghost story, you don't have to purchase a ticket.
Cool.
Yeah. More information, Google Storytelling Arts of Indiana and find out more about that.
Very good.
Do you know any ghost stories?
I do, but I'm saving mine for Fringe.
All right.
Yeah. We'll be back next week with more stories and things to do on
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Hi, this is Travis DiNicola. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter. Today we're revisiting some of our favorite Art of the Matter interviews from the summer. Next up, we chat with jazz musician Gary Walters about his new solo CD.
You may know jazz pianist Gary Walters for his work in Kathy Morris's band, though at one time or another over the past 20-some years, he's played with almost every notable Indiana jazz musician. During the last 5 years, he's been touring and recording with singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer, but now the only person he is backing up is himself with a new solo CD of a few standards and lots of original piano pieces. Travis DiNicola chatted with Gary about the new CD.
Gary, welcome to Art of Matter. Great to see you.
Oh, great seeing you too, Travis.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
Speaking of time, moments in time, we're actually right now listening to the first track off of your new CD. This is one of the pieces on the CD that's actually not original. This is Miles Davis' tune.
Yeah, it's a classic old tune of Miles that I first started playing with the late, great Chuck Carter and the Carter Markowitz Quartet. And so it's a fun tune. And apparently Miles even... he heard it at a Texas two-step dance.
Really?
And when he was touring that part of the world, and said, that's kind of a cute little thing, and twisted it into his own tune, Fran Dance.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the great tracks that's on this CD. We're going to talk about that in just a bit, and because I know each one that you selected has a very specific reason for being on the CD.
That is a little bit.
Yeah, but first I want to just sort of backtrack a little bit. You played with a lot of bands, a lot of jazz bands. A lot of people know the work you've done with Kathy Morris, and then past 5 years or so you've been touring and recording with not a jazz musician at all.
That's right. Yeah, I've been on in and out of the city and all over the country with Carrie Newcomer. I've been playing piano for her in her last four CDs, and when we tour together, it's pretty much Carrie on her voice and guitar and me on piano. So
yeah,
it's intimate settings even then, but she is well known and loved in just all parts of the country. It's pretty impressive to go to the West Coast and have folks singing along to her material, and go to the East Coast and the same thing happens. And, so, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And she's a great singer-songwriter. I'm trying to, like, you know, Carrie Newcomer, Kathy Morris, both great, great talents, very cool, interesting women. Trying to figure out how a piano player juggles those two.
Well, of course, I don't juggle them in the literal sense, or even the figurative sense of time, because it was sort of...
But very, very different gigs.
Very different gigs, yeah. And for me, it's always been about a variety of things musically. I love jazz, and it's what I teach at Butler part-time, and it's what I enjoy listening to amongst other sounds, but you know, a chance to play in more than one genre has always been important to me. And you know, through my career, I've played in R&B bands. I've played actually country western a few times, and you know, gospel stuff a little bit, the folk world for me was a little bit of returning to my days as a high school kid when I had buddies who played guitars and sang. This is when James Taylor and Carole King and all those folks were first coming out, and so I'd play along on the piano with them, so when Carrie invited me to be a part of her world, and of course she's doing all original material, I've always enjoyed doing all original material, so it was a great transition and opportunity for me to add that new sound to my list of things I do.
Yeah. Now you've obviously recorded many CDs with many people over the years, and as you just alluded to, many styles as well.
Yeah.
But am I correct? This is actually your first solo CD?
Yeah. This would be the first time that my name is on the front cover, and it's of course it's a solo piano, but nonetheless it's rather for some people, maybe even to see it, but no, it is the first time I've actually stepped out and said, okay, this is Gary Walters, this is what Gary Walters is about, and that's a little bit of what the title came from, the moments in time. It's like, okay, here's all the kinds of things and people I've been with, and things that are important to me in my world at this point in my life, and it's a moment in time in terms of a performance reality. You know, if you ask me to play those same songs today, they're not going to quite come out that way. And it's I've told a few people this is either my first or my last CD.
How did this all come about? I mean, how did you make the decision now's the time to do this?
Well, it was really challenging to make that decision. I've had family, friends, and fans for many, many years who said, come here, do your own CD. You know, they'll hear me playing on a recording of Kathy's, or recording of Carrie's, or recording of other people that I perform with, and, wow, you should do one of your own. And you know, or I'm out playing a solo gig, or a trio gig, and the same thing will come up. And for many, many years, I just felt like I didn't have a compulsion to do it. I didn't have any sense of need for the world to hear what I was offering, other than what I do with other folks. And so...
And now you do.
And yeah, I think I do. Well, no, I do.
Yeah.
Now I decided, that it's time to go ahead and take that extra step, you know, where there's a little special risk in doing it as you are yourself, and as any artist knows, like, oh, this is me.
One thing I really like about the CD that within the liner notes, you have a very specific reason sort of listed for each track as far as why you selected it. Either that's, you know, a favorite of someone that you know, or that it's, you know, reminiscent of someone you know, or for someone. In fact, let's take a listen to, if you don't mind, Laura, Laura, Laura.
Yes, sure.
Which is for your wife.
Yes.
I mean, this is a piece you composed.
It is. It is. This is actually is a piece that is to reveal the secret. It's actually literally a moment in time. It was me sitting down at the piano and thinking about my wife and our 18 plus years together and the. Various images flashing through my mind, and then just putting my fingers on the keys and seeing what came out. So it's a complete improvisation. I do think it captures some elements of what my wife is all about, and I've had many other people who know her have said, "Oh yeah, that's Laura, Laura, Laura." So
now, what does she say?
I think she says the same thing. You know, that's a good question. I can't say that I've actually asked her specifically what about that. She's being a good supportive wife and telling me the whole thing's good anyway, so who knows where the truth there is.
Well, since it follows immediately after Laura, Laura, Laura on the CD, I want to talk about Rosie Rosebud.
Okay.
Because that's for your dog.
That is for my dog, and it has a sort of now a bittersweet sense to it, because unfortunately Rosie Rosebud passed away. She was diagnosed with a cancer, and not 2 months ago, Laura and I had to make a difficult decision. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't mean to make it a downer show. You know, she was a sweetie that we'd rescued from Humane Society. That she came to us as an older dog with other medical problems as well, but she just had this kind of a gloom, I would describe it as, when she ran, that was just so cute. So I wanted to somehow figure out how to create that image musically for myself and for those who knew and loved Rosie Rosebud. That's what came out of that, Rosie Rosebud.
I mean, the whole CD in many ways is very sweet, and it's very enjoyable to listen to.
Thank you.
You pick a song. I've just picked three in a row there.
Well, yeah, so difficult. Maybe we should hear Shelley Intermezzo. Another original of mine as well, but Shelley Intermezzo is a song that I was studying composition with Dr. Michael Shelley from Butler University, and I was working on a big piece and for strings and percussion and piano. It was my final project with him, and I needed to not think about that music for a little bit. So I stepped away from that score and sat down at the piano and started playing around with some ideas and came up with something that was back in my jazz world, styles more. And the result is the piece that you now hear called Shelley Intermezzo. So I felt like I should dedicate a little bit there to Dr. Shelley just for helping me to find those notes in spite of it not being what I was supposed to be doing at the time.
The recording of the CD. You recorded down in Bloomington?
I did. I was at the same studio, Airtime Studio, owned by David Weber. David's recorded lots of the folks in the IU community, as well as Carrie Newcomer. I've been down there for all of her albums. Excuse me. And several other folks that I can't really think of the name off the top of my head here, but David's got a wonderful studio out in the woods, a place that he built himself, and he has a piano that I've always enjoyed playing on. And you know, for piano players, you got to find the instrument first, sort of, and then think about the room. Well, it's doubly good in this case, because not only is the piano great to play on and the way it sounds, the way it feels, the way it responds, but it's also a nice studio space, and you get the added bonus of looking out the windows at the birds and the trees and the beautiful woods that he's surrounded his studio with. So
sounds ideal. I've got a whole new image of how I'm going to listen to the CD.
It has a whole naturalness. But the other part of the recording process for me was I was trying to get back to the idea of not taking advantage of the 21st century digital capabilities. So it, in each case, these are complete takes without edit. I can hear all the words. Some other people may hear a few of them as well, but the it's sort of old school, I guess you'd say. Yeah. It's also reminiscent of what happened in the early days of jazz recording. Everybody stood in the same room and did their thing, even though it's just me. But I didn't want to go in and chop it up and reassemble it and say, oh, listen how perfect I am.
So each one a complete take, but not necessarily, I'm guessing, one take for each song?
That's also true. Thank
so you.
So
you did it. Probably did a couple and then picked out the one you liked the most.
In some cases, it turned out still to be the very first take I'd done. But yes, I would listen to, if I felt like that was a good take, I didn't need it to record it another time, I would. Other times I did record several versions before I finally sat and listened to the 3, 4, or 5 copies and went, all right, which one's got the fewest warts and all that business. It was a case that I did multiple takes at times.
Yeah. Briefly, tell me about the CD release party coming up at the Jazz Kitchen.
I'm going to be at the Jazz Kitchen June 26th. That's a Saturday. It will be from 7 to 10 p.m. That's that early show that David Dali likes to do these days when he's is very gracious in allowing me to do that. The plan is for me to be not literally in the middle of the room, but it will be a performance in a round where folks will be on all sides of me. And I'm not going to do 3 hours of solo piano. I wouldn't subject anybody to that. But I have invited a few great folks from the community come and do some duos with me, including Matt Pivik, who is our newest faculty member at Butler University, a very fine jazz saxophone player, along with Richard Dole on trombone, who everybody knows and loves, and Rich has a gig at the Aristocrat every Tuesday night from 6 to 9. Dean Franca from the Symphony, who's in the group Icarus Ensemble with me. He and I are going to do a couple duos. And then closing out, it'll be myself in a trio with Peter Hansen, who's also with the Symphony and a fine bass player that we use in Icarus as well, and John Craybill, who teaches at Butler University and is also in Icarus. So we'll do a trio thing to close out the evening. So.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. I'm sure we'll hear some of the tracks for Moments in Time. Some interpretations of them that night.
Yeah, the plan is to do a few of them solo, but probably a couple of them I'll treat in a duo fashion. One of them I'm going to do with the trio. So that's the plan anyway.
Excellent. Gary, thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter, and congratulations on the CD.
Thank you, Travis, and thanks for having me. I love the show. Great to be able to do this with you.
Travis DiNicola with jazz pianist Gary Walters. His new solo CD is titled Moments in Time and is available at Indie CD and Vinyl and Vibes Music and online at cdbaby.com and iTunes. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll get to chat both with Mary Poppins and a comic book artist.
Wait, not at the same time.
You just never know.
We'll also hear about a new project, a storytelling project, from former IPS Superintendent Esperanza Zendejas.
Plus, we'll have our arts calendar that we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for more information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.